You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 58. The last one was a replay of one of our most popular episodes, a discussion I had with Sally Asher back in September 2016 about the cemeteries in New Orleans. As you can probably hear, I'm still struggling to get over the flu, and there was just no way I could get a new episode out last time. In any event, Sally and I talked about the St. Louis cemeteries in New Orleans and the rituals surrounding how we bury the dead here. We also talked in depth about the origin of the second line and how it's changed over time. My favorite part, though, is Sally describing the stories of the people buried in our cemeteries. She wrote an entire book about this topic, and she shared some of the best stories on the podcast. It was a fun discussion. If you've ever wondered about the cemeteries and burial rituals in New Orleans, you'll enjoy it. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. Today's show is the third and final segment of our series on Louisiana plantations. Back in episode 54, we talked with Joy Banner at the Whitney Plantation. Whitney is the only one whose primary focus is on the lives of the enslaved. In episode 55, we followed up by talking about planning a visit to plantation country and described the journey my wife and I took along River Road. We talked about Oak Alley, Nottoway Plantation, and a whole lot more. In today's episode, we head north of Baton Rouge to a little town called St. Francisville. My wife and I spent two nights at the Myrtles Plantation there, said to be one of America's most haunted homes. Join us as we sit down with Morgan Moss and Miss Esther Eby as we learn all about the plantation's history, its former occupants, strange sightings, and more. We also explore all that St. Francisville has to offer, and I think you'll be surprised at the variety. Before we jump in, a quick word about our sponsor, Lionheart Prints. You might remember Liz Marty Cook, the chief enthusiast of Lionheart, from episode 51. That was the show where we featured three New Orleans business owners, Liz, Kristen of Home Malone, and Patty over at Chop Industries. If you headed to New Orleans for French Quarter Fest, Jazz Fest, or just a fun weekend, be sure to stop in and check out Lionheart. It's on Magazine Street, just off Louisiana Avenue, clustered among a great group of stores. You'll find beautiful hand-lettered cards and prints, one-of-a-kind offerings by local artists, some cool t-shirts, and lots more. I love my Who's Your Car Daddy t-shirt and plan on wearing my Everywhere Else is Just Tuesday shirt until next Mardi Gras. Come check out Lionheart Prints and be sure to say hi to Liz, to Morgan the Pressman, to Allison, and the whole gang over there. Use code BEYONDBOURBON at checkout or in store to save $5 off any t-shirt. With that, let's jump into my discussion with Morgan and Miss Eby.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. In today's episode, we're going to take you on an overnight getaway. We're traveling to St. Francisville, just north of Baton Rouge. We're going to be visiting one of the most haunted homes in America. This home's been featured on numerous television shows, magazine articles, and all across the internet. I couldn't do this alone, so I asked for a couple special guests to be our tour guide as we explore not only the Myrtles Plantation, but also the wonderful little town around at St. Francisville. I'm joined today by two people who just know so much and are so passionate about it. The first is Miss Esther Eby, and also Mr. Morgan Moss. Thank you so much, Morgan and Miss Esther, for being on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome. We're glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So a little bit of background for the listeners. I ran into Morgan a couple months ago down in New Orleans, and we were talking about, a mutual friend introduced us, and we were talking about the Myrtles Plantation being just outside of Baton Rouge, and we'll get into all that. And it's not that far from New Orleans. And as you know, as listeners to the podcast, the tagline is an insider's guide to New Orleans, but the primary title is Beyond Bourbon Street. And so today we're going way beyond Bourbon Street, and we thought we'd take you on an overnight excursion, a place to get away from New Orleans a little bit and experience something completely different. And that led us to the Myrtles. The Myrtles Plantation, as we're going to hear all about, is widely known as one of the most haunted houses or haunted places in America. And we're going to explore that with Miss Esther and Morgan and get to know that and get to know St. Francisville as well. So with that a little bit, let's talk a bit, Morgan and Miss Esther, if we can, just about where are we? Where is the Myrtles Plantation?
Well, the Myrtles Plantation is 25 miles north of Baton Rouge. You know, we sit just a couple of nautical miles off of the river, so not your traditional plantation property that sits right on the Mississippi River, but yeah, St. Francisville's nestled in between Natchez, Mississippi and Baton Rouge.
And we were talking earlier today, Morgan, that, you know, to get here from New Orleans, if you're in New Orleans and you're coming for an overnight stay, it's probably an hour and 45 minutes, maybe 2 hours door to door, depending on traffic.
Yeah, I would say that's about right. It's, you know, it's not a bad drive at all, depending on what the traffic's doing and how things are flowing. I'd say you can safely get here in an hour 45.
And for me, what's exciting is that it's a world away. It feels very different. Morgan, you were gracious enough today to take my wife Marie and I around on sort of an exploration of all there is, and we're going to get into that, not far from the plantation here. But it has a very different topography than New Orleans. It's a hilly area, for one thing. You know, different landscape. It's wooded. It feels like you are hours and hours away from New Orleans, I would say.
Yeah, certainly. It's got that that rich history of Louisiana and that Louisiana Cajun homey feel. But and from one aspect, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, that this area in St. Francisville, between its rolling hills, its topography, and the lay of the land around here would remind a lot of people of, you know, maybe a diet version of Western North Carolina, or maybe some of the mountains in Ozarks and in Arkansas. But it's quite a unique little piece of Louisiana.
Yeah, it's certainly a whole lot hillier than back home in New Orleans, without a doubt. And so Miss Esther had to step away for a minute, so that's okay. We'll fill in for her. But how did your family come to own the property known as the Myrtles?
Well, my mom and dad didn't have me until they were 42, and so they weren't expecting to have my brother and I so late. So I got an older brother, JG. He's 2 years older than me. So my mom had just retired whenever they had me. She was still working whenever they had JG. They decided where better to raise their kids than in the country, in the rolling hills of St. Francisville. And so they started looking for property up here, and they found the Myrtles. They fell in love with the property. You know, mom was newly retired from being a school teacher, but, you know, still young enough that she wanted something that was going to challenge her and, you know, hold her interest. And so we purchased the property. They purchased the property, rather. I was 8 months old. You know, she did it with the intent of keeping her schedule busy with some bed and breakfast guests and a few tours, and that's how we came into it. And you know, here we are today, 25 years later.
And so so that was in 1992, you said.
Yeah.
But the history of the property goes way back. And Miss Esther, could you just kind of give us a little refresher of when was the Myrtles created?
Okay, built in 1796 by General David Bradford. And General Bradford, having 10 sons, one daughter, he arranged for his only daughter, Sarah, to marry a gentleman named Judge Clark Woodruff that had studied law with him. And that's when a lot of our stories began. Judge Woodruff took on a mistress, a house servant. She was caught eavesdropping on some of his family business. And as punishment, he cut off her left earlobe. It left her upset, and in reply, she baked a birthday cake using the juices from the popular but poisonous oleander, killing the judge's wife and two of their children, and all four of those spirits still live with us at the Myrtles.
And so that's in part, obviously, how we get to it being such a haunted place. But let's set the stage a little bit. 1796, the land that we sit on today is not part of the United States at all.
Not at that time, it was not.
Right. It was. Was it a Spanish territory at that time?
Yes, it belonged to Spain-owned Louisiana at that time.
And so I'd like to just explore a little bit about General Bradford. Sort of had his own run-in with the United States.
He kind of did. President George Washington had put a tax on whiskey in Pennsylvania. General Bradford led the Whiskey Rebellion, and he came to Louisiana knowing he could stay because Spain owned the land.
So he essentially got away from the United States because he was in a little bit of trouble.
Just a little bit.
Comes to a Spanish territory.
Yes.
Purchases the property. How big was the property about back
then? At
the
time, it was 650 acres.
And he purchased it with the intent of running it as a crop-producing income.
Exactly. Well, cotton at the time was very not so popular, but he had indigo as his main crop at one point.
And so a little bit about the house, if we could, as we go in the structure today, what is amazing to me is how well-preserved it is.
Oh, yeah.
But as we see it today, it was a little bit smaller. when the general built it. Is that right?
It was smaller. General Bradford had four rooms down and four rooms upstairs. And of course, the staircases were outside because of that extra tax if it was inside. So it was nicknamed the Saddlebag House. And then in 1834, a wealthy family, the Sterlings, took over and they enlarged the home.
And we happen to be sitting in the general store, mm-hmm. where you check in, and we'll talk about that a little bit, about staying at the Myrtles. But this building that we're in, although I understand it was rebuilt because of a fire, this was the first place where he brought his family. Is that right?
It's the first place that General Bradford built when he got here, yes. So it's 2 years older than the home.
And so then it's passed on. You mentioned that his daughter is married off to his business partner. Is that right?
That's correct. Judge Clark Woodruff.
Is it run as a plantation at that time as well?
It was, yes. Judge Woodruff continued to raise indigo, then cotton, and Judge Woodruff, after losing part of his family from the poisoning, Chloe baking a birthday cake, killing the judge's wife, two of the children, then he turned it over to a man named Ruffin Gray Sterling, who accumulated over 5,000 acres. Cotton was the money-making crop, so he became quite wealthy.
And I guess we should point out, the property isn't actually, it doesn't actually front the river, but it's not that far from the river. Is that right? Do I have that right geographically?
Yeah, that's correct. So the Myrtles, to the best of my knowledge, Miss Eby could probably speak more educatedly on this than myself, but to the best of my knowledge, the Myrtles property never actually went to the river. In fact, the way the river bends around St. Francisville, the river's a lot more... A lot more to our west, kind of southwest, as opposed to our south. And so the property ran pretty much directly south, with the river being off to the southwest. So the property never really even got that close to the river.
That is correct. And of course, you know, we're talking years ago, and what we use as the back of the house now where we are was the front of the house facing mm-hmm. the river. And of course, a lot of slaves and whatever, you know, took their supplies back and forth, of course, by manpower.
Right. And so, again, to circle back to Chloe. So Chloe really plays a huge role in not only the family history, but also the legend that lives on and the tradition that lives on today in terms of, so she poisons the children. My understanding is that her intent was not to kill the children. Is
exactly.
That right?
And from all the history that I've read, it certainly was not her intent. By being a nanny over the children, certainly she had love for them. And she thought by being caught eavesdropping and being forewarned about eavesdropping, that's where the problem came in. So she thought if she baked the birthday cake, get close to the family again, even making the children ill, they would need her to take care of them. And she would get household duties back instead of being sent to the fields. So no, it was not her intent. And I do feel that, not to harm the children, to make them ill and need her.
And my understanding is that when she was caught eavesdropping, she's sort of known, and as we talk about some of the sightings around the property, it seems that there's always a turban on her head.
Yes, always a green turban. Of course, having that defect to the ear, she covered it by wearing a green turban. And that's how we know, or we truly believe, when someone picks up something in a photograph or whatever, the turban is there, and we know that that is Chloe.
And she's wearing the turban because her ear was cut or cropped, is that right?
That's correct.
And it was a punishment for the eavesdropping.
Well,
is that right?
You know, it was during the time that you, if you were caught eavesdropping, and you, that means that you weren't as loyal as you should have been. And so that was to let anyone know that this was some kind of punishment that was given. And so that's why the left earlobe was cut. Hmm. And she wore the turban just for beauty. I mean, I'm sure she was beautiful anyway, but it was to cover that problem.
And so ultimately she poisons the children. She believes it's going to win her back into the home by being able to take care of the kids. That goes horribly wrong. And a couple of the children die, yeah, as well as their mom. Is that right?
That is true. Yes, it does go horribly wrong. It's a good word for it. But yes, the mother, two children died from the poisoning, and their spirits are still here, as well as Chloe's. And the reason we know that it's so strongly here, they did believe in covering mirrors with a black cloth whenever anyone died throughout any of the South during the time. And it was left, supposedly one of the mirrors left unattended, and their spirits are here.
And before we sat down for the interview, I had the opportunity to take a tour with Miss Sue, and she pointed out several of the mirrors where you can see sort of I would say, an image or a little bit of discoloration sort of in the shape of faces. And she pointed out to us some examples of people have come and taken pictures and they don't see anything. And then when they go back and look at the pictures on their phone or before those days when they would develop them, you would see things that you could clearly make out as a person or a shadow walking by or something like that.
Very true. It's not easily seen with the naked eye, but once it's developed, you can easily see, yeah.
And I should mention again that with Morgan and Miss Evie over at the Myrtles Plantation, I didn't mention you can find the information about them at their website at myrtlesplantation.com. You can also follow them on Instagram at the Myrtles Plantation and on Facebook. We'll put all that information over in the show notes, which will be at our website, beyondbourbonst.com. You know, we had the opportunity to come in last night and we stayed in the General David Bradford suite. And I understand that we came in late at night. It was storming. And I'm sort of thankful that I didn't get all the stories before we tucked in for the night. But as Sue was saying, it's quite common for people to feel a presence or to maybe have the bed move or something like that in the property.
That is true. And in General Bradford suite where you were, especially would have been a stormy night last night, did anything happen?
Not too much, but we were a little nervous and
Looks like you're a little nervous now. You have another night.
About it now. That's right. Thank you very much. And that's a good opportunity, and we'll let you go in a minute, Miss Evie. But you do have the opportunity not only to come see for yourself and to take the tour, but you can stay here. And what I love is that there's a couple of choices. You can stay in the main building where we did. We stayed last night in the General Bradford suite. But you can also stay in cottages on the property as well. But from what I understand, people have sightings and feelings and weird things happen all over the property.
That's right. They do. And you'll get an example of that tonight. You were in the house last night and the cottages tonight. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, let's see what happens. Yeah. And so we figured, we're game for it. We'll try all the experiences. One of the things that you guys have just outside on the veranda here is a picture that was taken, I don't recall, in the 70s maybe, that there's a shadow there. If you could talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That picture of Chloe, in fact.
Yeah, so that photo was actually taken by my mom in 1992.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, so that was when my family had first purchased the property, and to the best of my understanding, it was a long, long time ago, and I was a baby boy, but what I understand, my dad, my older brother, and myself were at our hunting camp just about 15 miles up the road, and it was a holiday, and so the property was closed, and my parents, who had just recently purchased the property, were in the process of having it reinsured. And part of the requirements for that were photos of the property. And, this wasn't in the digital days. This was back when rolls of film existed. So
sure.
My mom mailed in the roll of film, not even having viewed it, just knowing that she had checked off the box on all the things that were required for the photos. And so she submitted her photos, and a week later that she gets a phone call from her new insurance adjuster, claiming that she was not allowed to have staff members in her photos, that it had to be just of the assets and of the house. She couldn't have any personnel in the photos, and she was awfully confused because the photos were taken on a holiday and there were no staff members on the property. And so she requested to see it, and that's when we discovered the photo that you see today.
And it's interesting, I'll leave some of that for when you come on your own visit to the Myrtles, but there's some evidence there, and National Geographic took a look at it, and some others took a look at it to validate what they saw. I know that you need to get on with your evening, Miss Evie, but before I let you go, I understand that you have been here working at the property for quite a long time, is that right?
I have been here for a long time, and it's been interesting, because guests will say, I want to tell you something, but I know it's going to sound strange, but nothing sounds strange. I love hearing stories, and it's so many that I have heard, and when people tell me that they think they've saw something, or they think that a child maybe pressed down on the bed and they know that feeling. Even I've had people tell me that they could feel as if a child crawled in bed and kind of got comfy the way a grandchild will do or something. I've heard those things. So nothing really surprises me. And after hearing things all these years and even seeing more than once a little girl dressed as I thought for a reenactment, a little pink and white dress, pink pantalooms, and skipping up the front walkway, certainly there's a lot of spirit. There are spirits here.
Well, the other thing that I think besides the spirits and the apparitions here is transitioning a little bit, there is a real sense of community among the team of you that work here.
Well, we're family.
And it feels that way.
Oh,
very
yeah, certainly.
Much.
Yeah.
And, you know, without embarrassing Morgan too much, I assume that you have been here most of young Morgan's life.
He's precious. I'm not going to tell any secrets, but Morgan.
Come on, Missy.
Oh, baby. Morgan is Morgan Moss.
And I think that's, you know, we'll get into you and I, Morgan, about the plans for the plantation and the property in St. Francisville. But it does strike me, having been here all of 24 hours, that it has such a family feel. And while I would encourage you, particularly if you're interested in the paranormal and the ghosts and whatever else might happen here, that there's so much more to the Myrtles.
Oh, yeah. Certainly. We have a love circle, and we welcome everyone in that circle, including you're welcome.
We feel very welcomed here. Again, good, 24 good. Hours in, we feel like family.
Good.
So I appreciate your time.
Oh,
I know
thank you.
You have your own family and things to attend to this evening, but I appreciate you stopping in with us for a little bit.
Aren't you sweet? All right.
Thank you,
baby.
So, Morgan, I want to talk about your plans for the property and also St. Francisville, but I do want to take our listeners, back just a little bit and talk about, you mentioned that you were all but born here. You have lived here your whole life. But I understand before you decided to take over the family business, if you will, you had quite a career for being relatively young, I would say, before you took over. So can we just talk a little bit about what your background was and what you did before you decided to take on this endeavor?
Yeah, so my career post-tourism wasn't your traditional transition into how I got to where I am today. So I grew up racing motorcycles. I started racing motorcycles when I was 8 years old. When I was 12 years old, my family relocated to North Carolina to pursue my racing career. I had an amateur Suzuki contract, and so we relocated ourselves to North Carolina for the betterment of my motorcycle racing career, and I pursued that. You know, we achieved a lot, and were able to do a lot with that. You know, I ended up signing with Fred Andrews' Monster Energy Yamaha team when I was 16 and racing several years in the pro stuff, but during my pro career, I was kind of plagued with injuries. I didn't have quite the results that I was looking for. But anyways, I took an early retirement at the age of 22 from my motorcycle racing career, and came back home to Louisiana to get involved in in the family business.
So what prompted you? What made you make the decision that you wanted to come back to St. Francisville and the Myrtles?
Well, Louisiana was always home, you know, and when I came back to, I guess you would have to say that I chose to come back home to Louisiana, to St. Francisville, before I really decided to get involved at the Myrtles. The main reason I came back home to St. Francisville was because I grew up in St. Francisville until I was 12. And then when we relocated to North Carolina, motorcycle racing consumed so much of my life that North Carolina never really became home. You know, I spent probably 45 to 50 weekends of the year. And when I say weekends, it was typically a Wednesday through Monday travel. So the majority of the week in the motorhome, traveling and racing and, you know, seeing 40 plus states a year. So my travel schedule was so chaotic that it just never really allowed me to, you know, adapt to North Carolina as being home. It was more of a location that I was based out of. So when I got to the point, I actually moved back home to Louisiana before retiring from my career. I moved back home to Louisiana in my early 20s, or 19-ish rather, just because it felt like home, and I had gotten to a point in my racing career that, you know, I had the luxury of being able to call wherever I wanted home, because of my when you get to that level of racing, the bikes, you know, your equipment and stuff goes with the team, so you're not responsible for hauling all that stuff, which makes traveling tremendously easier. So that's when I decided to come back home to Louisiana. And then at 22, I had some injuries that forced me out of racing. And I took some time off because I didn't really know what I wanted to do just yet. And in the meantime, we ended up losing our gift shop to a fire.
So what year was that the fire happened here in the gift shop?
That was 2014. August 6th of 2014, because to be specific, I remember that call quite well. Yeah.
And you were telling me the story earlier today that after that call, your dad came back to rebuild it, and you decided to come back and try to help him build that.
Yeah, so it wasn't immediately, but yes, my dad is a general contractor and was a general contractor on that project. We lost our gift shop to the fire on August 6th, and you know, although it was a serious fire, it was a 3-alarm fire, it was primarily smoke damage more so than anything else. And so a lot of the old wood and timbers and, you know, materials from the original structure were salvageable or semi-salvageable. You know, all the subcontractors and people that we were allowing to give us their opinion on the project. We're all suggesting that we tear it down and start from scratch. But this building's just too near and dear to our hearts to be able to allow that to happen. This is the most historically significant building on the property. It was built in 1794, and General Bradford lived in this while he built the main house. And we just felt, you know, if any of it could be salvaged, it deserved to be salvaged. You know, we didn't want to see it torn down, thrown away, and replaced with a modern structure that looked out of place for the property. And so my dad took on that undertaking, and 3 or 4 months into it, I could see how he was wearing thin and me not having anything going on, and you know, the guilt kicking in. I decided to come back in and help him with the project. And it took us 9 months to complete the project. And during those 9 months, more so than, you know, enjoying the project, was just enjoying my time on the property. You know, we were still in full operations during that time. So when we got to work in the mornings at 7, we were having coffee and visiting with our breakfast guests that had spent the night, and getting to interact with people from all over the country and all over the world. And it was just something really rewarding about getting to experience all of that. And then also just looking around me and seeing how much room the property had for improvement. I mean, that it's a beautiful property, don't get me wrong, but there were some things that needed to be updated and some things that needed to be addressed. And I just really saw that I had an opportunity to work on some of those things, and to not necessarily go a different direction, but just bring things up to a little bit more current of a time.
Well, one of the things, as you were walking us around earlier today, just outside the store where we are, the general store, there's a beautiful pond. But you said that's a fairly recent, it didn't look that way not so long ago.
Yeah, not quite what it looked like.
And if I can try to describe it now, there's cypress knees, there's cypress trees out there. I don't know how big it is. It's pretty large, and there's a bit of an island in the middle. It really kind of sets the scene for what we'll talk about, what you guys are trying to do here in terms of creating a destination and a place that's respectful of the past and also peaceful and relaxing. But you said it was quite overgrown and didn't look near as bucolic as it looks at the moment.
Yeah, that's very true.
And so you guys worked on that. And we should also, maybe this is a good time to tell our listeners, if you're interested in coming to the Myrtles Plantation, you have several options. You can stay in the main house like we did last night. And we stayed downstairs, I think the only room or the only suite that's available in the main house. But you also have some guest rooms upstairs, right?
Yeah, we do. We've got a pretty broad variety of accommodations on the property. So we actually have 6 overnight accommodations in the main house that our guests have the option to spend the night in. But then we also have 4 more modern accommodations on the property that we refer to as our cottages. And they were added to the property in 2013 because we saw... what had inspired that that change is the Cocoa House, the white accommodation that you see at the other end of the parking lot. Was a property that was a house that was moved onto the property during I think the late 70s, I believe, by the previous owner, Arlen Deese, from what I understand. Anyways, it had always serviced as like a manager's house on mm-hmm. the property. It was always a like staff housing. We had gotten to a point where it wasn't serving that purpose anymore, and so we decided to renovate it and turn it into an overnight accommodation. You know, the guests really enjoyed it, and what we realized was that small groups were able to come and enjoy the property, and that we were seeing a lot of them, and that was really, you know, rewarding to be able to cater to that new market. And so we decided, you know, that we were seeing so many people enjoy the that larger style of accommodation, because everything in the main house has a 2-person max occupancy, and that you know, that's not a rule that we have the luxury of being able to be in. So yeah, so we built those cottages, and they can sleep up to 4 guests, and so it is a little bit more accommodating to groups. And then also we'll be breaking ground on our new restaurant project right around the corner, and we'll have 6 new accommodations coming with it. That'll be we're really excited about that. It's going to be it's going to be 2-story balcony accommodations overlooking the courtyard and the gardens and the lawn, and a really cool structure for it to be. You know, we hate that we're having to do new construction and modern construction on the property as a result of losing our restaurant back in March due to a fire, but we feel like we've done a tremendous amount of research and due diligence to make sure that we're, you know, we're maximizing that and making the best out of it that we can. And so we teamed up with a designer, Andy McDonald, out of Madisonville. Are really excited with the product that he's put on paper for us. It really has a traditional Louisiana feel to it, and is something that's going to age really well with the property. I'm confident that as soon as it goes up and the project's complete, it's going to, you know, everything, the all the all the links and details that we're going to make sure that it maintains its historical accuracy are going to make it very difficult to be able to date the building and say that, you know, this was a modern building, because it's really going to be cool.
Well, one of the things that you and I talked about, it took us months for us to be able to come out and for you and I to get to sit down together. And over that time, as you and I spoke, we talked about, a couple of things. But one, the restaurant before the fire was really a destination here in St. Francisville. When I asked people that live in Baton Rouge or live nearby or maybe come up for the weekend, they frequently talked about the restaurant at the Myrtles as being a place to go, a destination, have a nice meal with friends or family or celebrate special occasions. And so that's been lost in the community, and you guys are working towards bringing that back. The other thing that we talked about was your vision of seeing that the Myrtles become a destination, a place that maybe if you're in New Orleans or you're in Houston or maybe up north of here a couple hours, you might come down and really experience a good couple nights here in St. Francisville. And it feels like that's what you're working towards, trying to bring that together as a vision.
Yeah, absolutely. Ultimately, what we want people to do is enjoy the property in whatever capacity they see fit for them. You know, our job here at the Myrtles is to make sure that we meet our guests' needs. You know, we, a lot more so than an attraction or, you know, a historical property, we look at ourselves as a destination, not necessarily a resort style destination, a really unique destination. We feel that that's why so many people are so attracted to the Myrtles. But whether you're coming to relax, whether you're coming to be entertained, whether you're coming to be educated, you're coming for the historical value, or you're coming for the folklore and the mystery and the hauntings, or, you know, to just have a cocktail in the courtyard, you know, that's what we're here for. And that's how we try to operate, to make sure everybody feels just as comfortable as the last person or the next.
You know, by the time this airs, we will have also aired or certainly recorded a couple episodes about the plantations and River Road and the impact of the enslaved, and also the impact, obviously, on the enslaved, that all of that was built on the backs of. And you and I had a conversation, several months ago about how do you balance that as an entity and as a business with the undeniable fact that, and this particular plantation had hundreds of slaves at one point. And I think that what you just said really hit me in the last day or so, that there's no denying that terrible history. And at the same time, trying to provide an opportunity that whatever you are interested in exploring, you have that. And so again, by the time you hear this, you will have heard, hopefully, that we'll have released the other episodes. And in some of those, we really try to explore the perspective of the enslaved. What intrigued me about coming to the Myrtles and St. Francisville in general is that it's an opportunity, as you said, and we'll talk a bit about St. Francisville, some of the places you can go and explore that history, and you can get educated. You can also see St. Francisville and the Myrtles as a place to come relax a little bit. And while I'm not trying to make light of that or disregard that history, it's also about trying to build a path forward. And it sounds like you guys have tried very delicately to balance those things and be respectful of the past. And you certainly, in the tour and visiting with the people that work here, that there's certainly a lot given to that history, but also try to show, it is part of history and part of a moment in time, and then move forward from that as best as possible. I wonder, in terms of St. Francisville, it's a pretty small town, as we were talking about, right? About, is it 6,000?
Yeah, just over 6,000 live here in St. Francisville.
And so if people were going to come to the Myrtles, which I think they should as a destination, and again, you can find that out at the myrtlesplantation.com, and we'll put all the information on our website. But if people were going to come and they're wondering, I'm really interested in the haunted information and maybe hopefully seeing or experiencing something, but I want to know what else I should do when I come to St. Francisville. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other things that if you come and use the Myrtles as a jumping off point that you might be able to do nearby.
Yeah, so I mean, for it being such a small town and as little of a place as it is, it's really got a pretty broad variety of options, you know. And we got to explore a couple of those today. But one really interesting thing about this area is the Angola Prison, which is a pretty fascinating story and operation in itself. Yeah, they have a museum out there that can educate you on a lot of that stuff. Also, we touched earlier on the topography and the terrain of this area and how unique it is in comparison to the rest of the state. Believe it or not, we have a destination down the road that's a trail system, Clark's Creek in Tunica Hills, that's got six waterfalls and several miles of hiking and trails and stuff through it. That just the last place you feel like you're in is Louisiana, South Louisiana.
Well, so, you know, one of the things that surprised me, well, a couple of those things we were talking this morning. So Angola, for those of you maybe not familiar, is a maximum security prison with a death row.
Yeah.
One of the things they're known for in Louisiana is that they host a prison rodeo in October of each year. And so in October and also in the spring, maybe one weekend they have a...
Yeah, they do it one weekend in April, and then they do it each Sunday, every Sunday in October.
So you might not think of a maximum security prison as a tourist destination, but the rodeo is extremely popular in Louisiana, and also there's a crafts festival sort of associated with it, as I recall, right?
Yeah, certainly. It's a full-day event, and it's interesting to say the least. You know, the rodeo is phenomenal, but even more so than you know how exciting the rodeo is just seeing some of the crafts and stuff that they have at the booths around the arena
and right outside the gate. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
I was just gonna say it's absolutely incredible, some of the craftsmanship that they have. You know, it's unbelievable.
And then there's also, again, we stopped in today for a few minutes. There's a really nice museum right out front at the gates. And then we didn't go in. One of the former cell blocks, I think, is now a museum or an extension of the museum. And there's a cafe there, I think, as well.
Yeah, correct. And to the best of my knowledge, from what I understand, is that that's also the original death row building. So I think in the last year or two, that was converted into an extension of the museum, and they did a cafe in there.
Yeah, it's certainly something we plan on going back and checking out more. And then you mentioned if you're sort of an outdoor type and you want a bit of an exercise while you're enjoying yourself, Tunica Falls, that system that you were talking about, you said it really ranges from moderate to pretty strenuous in terms of you can get a good exercise in and a good hike in out there.
Yeah, it can be as serious as you want to make it. We certainly have seen a lot of guests over the years that have come in covered in mud and look like they've just gone to war. And it's pretty clear with y'all just been to Clark's Creek, haven't you? Guilty as charged.
And so the Myrtles is a good jumping off spot for that. We also today, you took us to a wonderful place, the Magnolia Cafe, for lunch. And we ran into some guys that are part of a bicycling club. And you were explaining to Marie and I that there's so many miles of sort of country roads back here that are hilly and great for cycling.
Yeah, definitely. I would feel confident. And I'm a cyclist myself, as I was telling you. That was my crew that we ran into there at lunch today, the AODs, the angry old dudes. So, yeah, the terrain for St. Francisville and the quality of roads in regards to cycling is just absolutely phenomenal. I don't think there's anything that can rival it in the state, and you see that weekly. You know, there's huge group rides that come up here every weekend, you know, groups of guys and girls for that matter that come up and stay in the area, enjoy what St. Francisville has to offer, but then also just spend the weekend seeing it by bicycle.
And you know, if you're not so into, if you've listened to the last couple minutes, you're like, I have no desire to go on a strenuous hike, no desire to go on a serious bicycle ride. There's a whole lot more to do. And one of the things, again, in previous episodes that we've recorded, we've talked about plantations and river road coming from the south and coming up the river. But very close to where we are, not only should you come and explore the Myrtles plantation, there's several plantations within just 5, 10, 15 minutes away from here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's nine total within St. Francisville that operate as bed and breakfast. And there's, I was going to say five, but it's four right now. They just had one that went off tour on tour by request. But yeah, there's four plantations that you can tour on a daily basis here in St. Francisville.
And one of the things that struck me is again, you were so gracious to drive us around and be our tour guide for the day, that even within this very small community, the plantations are all pretty different in terms of, certainly you have the Myrtles and the haunted history here, and the fact that it predates the United States. You know, it wasn't part of the United States, but I was struck by each of them has their own story that's pretty different than the others.
Yeah, they do. They all have their own unique element that, you know, contributes to why that, you know, that itinerary looks so attractive for people coming to St. Francisville. You know, it's fun and interesting, and most of all, it's rewarding to have those other properties that you know, people are interested in seeing for different reasons that allows us to all work together to be able to have a little bit different of a product and all coexist.
One of the things that excites me, again, from the perspective of the podcast, is giving our listeners an opportunity to do something. Maybe you've been in New Orleans a bunch, or maybe you live in New Orleans, and you're looking for a little getaway, and you want to do something different. Well, you could take the two-hour drive, hour and 45-minute drive up here to St. Francisville, come stay a couple nights at the Myrtles. Again, you have the opportunity to stay in the main building. You could try the cottages. I think if we were to come back with our kids, we'd stay out in the cottages.
Yeah.
The cottage that we're in has two beds, plenty big enough for a family. And then it's a great jumping off point to explore. Again, just in a couple minutes, you can go to several plantations. We had just a terrific breakfast here in the general store this morning. We had a great lunch at the Magnolia Cafe. There's lots of outdoor things to do. And then we didn't even do this or talk about it today, but you're not far from Baton Rouge. So you could go down to the USS Kidd. You could explore the Capitol grounds there. You could even go over to LSU if that interests you and go kind of around the campus there. There's really a lot to do that I think might surprise people once you get out here in St. Francisville.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then hopefully, you know, obviously once the restaurant comes along, then there'll be yet another opportunity to come and enjoy that. Let's talk a little bit about the restaurant and when you hope it'll come up and what your plans are and what your hopes are for the restaurant.
Well, in the perfect world, we'd like to see the restaurant open in September 2018, which we're kind of encroaching on that deadline, and it's starting to get out of a practical window, but I've not given up on it just yet. But man, that would be absolutely ideal. You know, it's a slow month that allow us to do a bit of a soft opening. We're really excited about the concept for it. We're really excited about our approach towards it. We think it's going to be something that's really great for the Myrtles and really great for St. Francisville.
Well, one of the things you were showing us on the tour this morning, and you can certainly wave me off if you don't want to talk about the project and the concept of what it'll be centered around and kind of your idea behind that.
Yeah, so we've put a lot of thought into this restaurant and making sure that we end up with a concept that, you know, suits all purposes. And by that, I mean we wanted something that is going to be relatable to the era of when the property came to be. We feel like we're achieving that in a by having the wood-fired cook line. We're going to be cooking on a 10-foot open hearth as the centerpiece in the restaurant. The guests will be able to sit and dine around. It's also going to be a show kitchen, so the kitchen will be open and exposed to the dining room. We think that adds a lot of excitement to things, and there's certainly not anything like that around here, and so we think that's going to be really unique. And then also implementing some different ideas around the property to make sure that, you know, the dining experience starts long before you come into the restaurant. You know, we want the bottom line is we want the restaurant to have its own identity, and we want it to be, you know, we want as many people to come to the restaurant and for that to be as powerful of a reason and influence to come onto the property as coming to spend the night at the bed and breakfast is, or coming to tour the house is. And so we're going to do our best to accomplish that by implementing some different aesthetical pieces around the property that complement the restaurant, like our fruit, vegetable, herb, and spice gardens. We have a smokehouse that will be going on the property that will be incorporated into our grounds tour, where guests will be able to, you know, look through the sight glass to see what meats are hanging, whether it's a pig or smoked sausage hanging. You know, obviously, one of the big things for the open hearth concept is the wood. You know, it's wood fueled, and the wood's got to come from somewhere. And the majority of the restaurants that have concepts like this are in cities and don't have access to be able to do that stuff themselves. And so we're really excited. We were able to team up with some different arborists, local arborists in the area. You know, it's a byproduct of what they have, you know, with their services. So we'll be taking their wood, cutting it up, and then sending it to the restaurant to dry, age, and eventually go into our wood-fired hearth to service our meat and potatoes style menu. So we're really excited about it. We think it's going to be as much an experience as much based around eating with your eyes as it is eating with your mouth. And at the end of the day, that's what we're really excited about, you know, with selling the experience.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that strikes me again, The property isn't the property that you can explore as a guest is not huge, but there's a lot of variety here, and you guys are adding to it. And I love that you can, again, tour the house, you can stay in the house, you can experience or dive into the the ghosts and the stories and the, you know, perhaps you'll see something and experience something, but you can also step back and it's just a very peaceful place, which may sound weird when you're talking about ghosts and hauntings and, but it just gives off a very peaceful vibe here. And I think the things that, that you guys are adding to it will only contribute to that. Again, I'm visiting with Morgan Moss here at the Myrtles Plantation. The Myrtles is considered one of the most haunted houses in America. You guys have been featured on loads of television shows and been written up numerous times. But I would tell you that it offers something for everyone. So if you are very into exploring that and want to see what you can see for yourself, you should come and check it out. And at the same time, if maybe that freaks you out a little bit, I would tell you that there's plenty here for you as well, whether you visit for the day or you choose to stay. But just wandering around the grounds, it's relaxing. The pond is beautiful. There's rocking chairs out back of the main house as well as out in front of the cottages. And it is just, again, that may sound contradictory, but it is a very relaxing place. The other thing that I really appreciate, Morgan, is that, again, Miss Eby mentioned it, the sense of community that you guys have created. And you've been responsible for running the day-to-day operations for just a couple of years, but you were telling me how important that family is in building a real team that's engaged and committed and enthusiastic about doing what you guys are doing here.
Yeah, I mean, that's single-handedly the most important part of all of this to me, you know, more important than our product, more important than, than our appearance, more important than anything else is that balance of, you know, of our staff and making sure that everyone understands how much they're appreciated, making sure everyone understands how much they're valued, and making sure everyone understands how they're a part of the team and a part of the Myrtles family. And we feel like that's reflected in our guest experience, because when you walk through the door and you can tell the mood is light and the camaraderie is present, and we're having a good time, we're enjoying what we're doing, then a lot of times that flows over into the guest and affects their attitude and their demeanor. So it makes it a real easy place to spend time when you get to work with people that are as enjoyable to be around as our staff here at the Myrtles, and get to do something that's as fun and light as we get to do.
You know, it was, so you guys, I should have mentioned at the top, you guys were gracious enough to have us out as your guests for a couple nights here, but we arrived after a long drive up River Road in the fog and rain yesterday. And we had never been to the Myrtles. It's dark, a pretty heavy rainstorm. And so if you're coming to a place that is known to be haunted and you're showing up in a driving rainstorm and you're unfamiliar, we were a little bit on edge, to be honest. And the moment we stepped in, everyone was welcoming and friendly. And you could just feel that even at, gosh, it was a little bit later in the evening. And then when we woke up this morning and came into the store for breakfast, it's just been it feels like a family experience. So I applaud you guys on that. It is very welcoming. And we're excited to see the changes that you guys will continue to make. You know, I wonder, given the history of the plantation and the fact that there's been so many sort of sightings of and weird occurrences, does that make it difficult for you to get people to come want to be a part of the Myrtles experience?
Yes and no. I feel like, you know, there's certainly a niche market of people out there that are extremely attracted to that sort of stuff. And so I think it attracts and creates more interest. But, with my travels and with, my running and going and doing and running into different people that have heard of the Myrtles, and when they find out that I'm affiliated with the property and a lot of times their first response is, oh my gosh, that's that haunted house in St. Francisville. I could never spend the night. And I said, oh, it's not that bad. You got to come give it a try, honestly. So yeah, I'm sure there are people that are deterred from coming whenever they hear about the stories of the haunts and some of the different folklore stories of the property. But I would just encourage those people to come give it a chance, because I think they would be surprised at how well they'll sleep.
I agree with that, and I had a good night's sleep last night. I also, again, the Myrtles is such a central place here in St. Francisville in terms of the thing I've been most surprised about is how many things there are to do 15 or 20 minutes from here. And again, you and I were talking. I'm going to come back and explore Tunica Falls. And I don't think Marie is up for that. That doesn't seem like a fun thing to her, but it does for us. And then, again, such a diverse opportunity in a small area. You can go out and do a lot of outdoor things. You can go explore the museum at the prison. You can come, if you come, you said October is a very busy month with not only the prison rodeo, but other festivals and events going on here.
Yeah, absolutely. October is certainly a slam-packed month, not only for us here at the Myrtles, but in St. Francisville in general. There's pretty much an event, a function, or a festival going on every week in October. So, and the spring as well, pretty much all of March and April is the same way. If you can't find something to do in St. Francisville during the spring or the fall, it's because you're not looking hard enough.
And I can attest, we had a very full day of just glancing by several places that we could have spent an hour or two at each. Plenty enough to do for a long weekend or a getaway or just relaxing, whether it's an adult retreat or you come in with the kids like we'll do next time. Again, you can find out all about the Myrtles Plantation. We'll put it on our website over at beyondbourbonst.com. You can find them at myrtlesplantation.com and on Instagram and Facebook as well. Morgan, I just want to say not only thanks for hosting us, but thanks for taking the time to share your story and your vision of the Myrtles and the history with us.
Absolutely. I'm honored to be a part of it and get to spend some time getting to know you better and to be a part of the show. It's been nothing short of a pleasure.
Thanks, Morgan.
I really enjoyed talking with Miss Eby and with Morgan. We had a great time staying at the Myrtles and really appreciated their hospitality. It felt like being invited into a family get-together. We were also pleasantly surprised at how much there was to see and do in St. Francisville. It would definitely be a fun weekend getaway from New Orleans, or if you're driving to New Orleans and wanted to stop for a night or two along the way. Morgan, Miss Eby, and the entire team at the Myrtles could not have been nicer. I was curious to see how they were going to wrestle with the idea of being a destination for visitors and also dealing with the reality of slavery. It's a very different approach than Whitney, Nottoway, or some of the others, but somehow they make it work. You can find the notes for today's episode over at beyondbourbonst.com/58, including all the links to find out more about the Myrtles Plantation. If you want help planning your trip to New Orleans, don't forget about our paid travel consult service. It can really help when you want to get into the details and maximize your time. Find out more over at beyondbourbonst.com/travel. If you want to hear more shows like this one, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we're now on Spotify, too. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the show, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.